As if the loss of life at her recent Draw Muhammad cartoon contest in Texas weren't enough, perennial anti-Islam crusader Pamela Geller has now announced that she'll be using the winning drawing in her latest advertising campaign on Washington, D.C. public transit. It's not easy to think of a responsible response to this kind of behavior, especially if one hopes the response could have any sort of effect. Just before the Texas shootings, Religion Dispatch's senior correspondent, Haroon Mogul, wrote an extremely thoughtful article on his experience of attending a Geller event in New York City. His words make for incredibly relevant reading in the present situation, and I am so happy to have him back with us on State of Belief Radio. Haroon, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Would you just briefly describe the encounter that you had with Pamela Geller?
Sure. She spoke at Brooklyn College about a week and a half before the attack in Garland, Texas, and what I saw was really indicative to me of what she's doing to conversations about religion and Islam and extremism in the U.S. Mm-hmm. The overwhelming majority of people completely ignored her event. She wasn't hosted by any institution at Brooklyn College. She was privately invited by a professor. There were no university funds that went towards her speech. And the overwhelming majority of Muslim students, as well as other students at Brooklyn College, completely ignored the event. However, a small group of students did go. And the event descended very quickly into a back-and-forth shouting match that got at times very heated, including with people, I think, on both sides, making threats at one another. And I decided I should write about it. And then when the attack happened, I decided it had to be published.
Mm-hmm. You wrote about the inherent limitations to the knee-jerk counter-reaction some of the participants had to Geller.
We've gone through an evolution as an American Muslim community, and I'll tell you what I've been seeing. 10 or 15 years ago, we, unfortunately, a lot of us were not that sophisticated. And many times our response to this kind of provocation and this kind of speech, Pam Geller's type of activities, would usually be some kind of protest. It would be simple, crude, and usually not very effective. If anything, it would produce more attention to the problematic speech. Over time, people started to learn that that's not really very productive because you're giving attention to people who crave and seek and demand attention. Mm-hmm. So the new response became ignore it and ignore her. And that's what we saw happen in Texas, where she had a Draw Muhammad cartoon day. And Dallas, Texas, actually, which is near Garland, is home to about 150,000 Muslims. It's one of the larger Muslim communities in the United States, and it's actually one of the more dynamic Muslim communities in the United States. A lot of American Islam's most famous scholars, religious authority figures, are based there. So it's a hub for Muslim life. And out of all these scholars, all these mosques, all these communities, these tens of thousands of Muslims, not a single one decided to protest or respond to the event. They didn't want to give her any attention. They didn't want to give her the time of day. They didn't even want to exercise their right to free speech. And then this happens, where you have two previously radicalized individuals try to attack the event, and it creates a dilemma, because it says to people that even if you walk away, even if organizationally, institutionally, you ignore the provocation, there's always a chance someone somewhere on the margins, a lone wolf, someone who's been radicalized or who's a little bit off or dangerous or violent, is going to do something, and then your entire community is placed into jeopardy. So when I mentioned the inherent limitations, what I was trying to say and hoping to say was that we need to get to a point where we're more proactive. We need to be getting out there and talking to people instead of her. Ignoring her is fine, but I think intelligently responding to some of her arguments without necessarily addressing her is probably the better way to do it. And this combative approach is not helping. And that's what I meant with the Brooklyn College approach, where the majority of Muslim students ignore her, and a few decide to go and argue and debate with her, and it doesn't go anywhere.
As Pamela Geller leverages the tragedy in Texas by using the winning Draw Muhammad cartoon in anti-Islam bus ads in Washington, what's the best way? What's the most effective way of responding?
Well, there's an American Muslim comedian, Dino Baydala, who has a radio show as well, and he's been pretty active in the Muslim community, on the comic circuit, shall we say, for quite some time. And he proposed a set of ads for the subway, which would basically go up and be humorous and talk about different contributions Muslims have made to America and different qualities of Muslims. And he followed that up with a draw your favorite Islamophobe cartoon, which was kind of tongue-in-cheek. But the neatest response I saw was actually from a blog called Muslim Girl, where this young woman proposed draw your relative Muhammad Day. Since Muhammad, as some of your listeners might know, is one of the more popular names in the world, and it sometimes seems like every other person in the Muslim community is named Muhammad, she proposed draw someone you know named Muhammad Day. So Muhammad's your dad or your cousin or your uncle or your friend or your crush or your husband, what have you. And it was sort of like a goofy tongue-in-cheek way of responding to something very hateful and hurtful without taking away Pamela Geller's right to free speech and, of course, without threatening or engaging in a kind of rhetoric or discourse that can become threatening. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's honestly the best response, is you need some kind of levity, some kind of humor, throw something in there that's a little bit different, a little bit unexpected, maybe make people smile and get them to think a little bit differently about some of the things they hear in the news.
That's a terrific story to tell right now as people are thinking about how to handle their negative emotions on this. I'm curious, Arun, I thought of this when you said it a few moments ago, the change that is taking place in how the Muslim community reacts to Islamophobia. Is the progress that's being made in effectively responding to that, is it coming just because people are watching this happen more and getting more ideas of the way they should respond, or are they getting help? I mean, I know you study this all time, and so I'm not at all surprised that you are seeing more effective ways to respond. But are there lessons being learned throughout the community because there's intentional instruction about how to respond?
A little bit of both. A lot of the problem was really we were a very young community, and in some ways we really are. Most American Muslims, if they've been in the country that long, it's back to the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. American Islam in the modern form that we know today begins with the Nation of Islam, and then you have a wave of immigration in the 1960s and 70s continuing on to today. So you've got these two streams, again, you know, at most 60 or 70 years, and they've had to learn to work with each other and maybe even start to work with each other in recent times. So mm-hmm. a lot of this stuff is new to us. My parents, for example, were doctors. They were great doctors, but they didn't know anything about media. Mm-hmm. I've been in media, but I don't know that much about media necessarily. It's also reasonably new to me. So you build up a reserve of knowledge over time. You learn from your mistakes. And then you learn what other communities are doing, what other communities are facing. There's a mm-hmm. lot of interest among American Muslims at the kind of anti-Semitism, for example, that Jews face and faced in the past, racism, racist language, exclusionary rhetoric, the kind of language around immigration and Latinos. People are paying attention to the ways in which exclusion is practiced in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And seeing if they can draw lessons to their own experience. And in many ways, it's the same kind of language, the same kind of rhetoric, and the same lessons apply.
You describe an evolution in your own responses to hate and provocation. How would you say you have changed? And I guess even more importantly, what were the dynamics fueling your change?
Well, for me, honestly, when I was in college, I was the activist type, and I believed very strongly in a very limited model of activism and engagement. And I didn't really pay much attention to the world around me. And probably the thing that most shaped me is failure. A lot of the causes that I participated in didn't go anywhere. We were banging our heads against the wall. I remember coming out into the streets of thousands of people when the Iraq War was being talked about, thinking this is a terrible idea. And it turned out a lot worse than even I would have feared. And when you see that kind of thing happen and realize that that kind of protest had no effect, that we were completely ignored, it makes you realize that you need to maybe do something different, maybe to talk to people that you wouldn't otherwise talk to. One of the most interesting experiences I had was about a year or two ago when I went to Israel on a program to learn about Judaism in Israel. Mm-hmm. And although obviously I know many people who are Jewish, I had never actually directly engaged with people who described themselves as Zionists and who were active as Zionists in Jewish community life and Israeli life. And that was a very transformative experience for me because it occurred to me that I had basically placed myself into a silo. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I think we do that where we assume that because something is compelling to us, it will naturally resonate with other people. And we don't realize how other people might have concerns that we are completely ignoring. So I think I'm more aware now of why people fear Islam and the Muslim world, and why people think Muslims aren't doing enough or doing anything to combat extremism. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. But I'm definitely more alive to it. And the only reason I am is because many of the causes in which I participated turned out to be failures.
Mm-hmm. Haroon, you're a much sought-after public speaker. When you talk about the anti-Muslim industry in the United States, what do you say about that?
I think a lot of people have a hard time accepting and understanding that American Muslims are American. It's deeply frustrating and oftentimes confusing, but I think I finally figured out why that is. If you watch Fox News, I just did a segment on Fox News 2 days ago, pretty much every single Muslim they bring on is either an extremist or someone who's a former Muslim or with an uncertain relationship to the community who is saying that Muslims don't condemn extremism. So you only really ever hear from two kinds of Muslims, namely the Muslims who are extremists or the Muslims who are saying that Muslims don't condemn extremism. So if that's your primary news source, if that's what you're listening to and hearing, then your assumption is that American Muslims are no different than ISIS. And to me, that's endlessly disturbing and fascinating. When I write on Islamophobia, the kind of hate mail I receive, and you notice escalating as your audience increases in size, is simply phenomenal. I've talked to many journalists who aren't Muslim, including journalists who are Jewish, for example, Christian, who say that the minute they mention Islamophobia, the kind of hate mail and threats and harassment they receive is simply shattering. Mm-hmm. And that's a reality. And that's a sad fact, that an American community that has very American concerns and priorities and maps out like almost any other American community is assumed to be not just a foreign body, but a hostile body.
Mm-hmm. Haroon, when you look at what happened in Texas, my sense is that Pamela Geller got what she wanted. The two attackers got what they wanted. But we lost a moment when there could have been a step forward in trying to do away with what both sides wanted there. Is that a fair assessment?
To be honest with you, I was surprised by the response. I think a lot of people recognize the dangers of Pamela Geller's approach, by no means excusing or playing down the threat of violence and the fact that that's completely unacceptable. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, even on the right, really were disturbed by what they saw she was doing. Geraldo Rivera had a great little monologue on Fox News where he pointed out that no other community is treated in this way. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but it was an impassioned moment, and it was interesting to see it coming from the right. Donald Trump as well, another figure who I never imagined I'd be retweeting, was saying precisely the same thing, that this is insightful. And the argument I use to people is, you have a right, for example, to go into a neighborhood, let's say in Baltimore, after the riots and wave a Confederate flag. But why would you do that? Mm-hmm. What is the point of doing that? And what do you hope to draw out of it? And if you get violence out of it, what are you really contributing to any kind of conversation? And I think the problem is that Pamela Geller is using one kind of freedom, namely freedom of speech, in order to basically take away other freedoms, right? The only way democracy works is if you use your freedoms with responsibility. And that's nothing the government can or should ever try to enforce, or we should try to force on other people. It comes from some kind of internal compass, some kind of internal morality. And if we're using freedom of speech to incite people, then that becomes a problem. And the way to respond to that is by not allowing yourself to get into that kind of conversation, because then you're giving her what she wants. So I think in a perverse sense, she got what she wanted, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But we also learned something greater, which is that for American Muslims, it was very heartening to see that a lot of people showed sympathy for American Muslims that we may not have thought would have showed that kind of sympathy.
Haroon Mogul is a senior correspondent at Religion Dispatches magazine. He is a fellow at Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. He's an author. He's a public speaker whose work appears on CNN, Salon, Al Jazeera. And I appreciate so much you being willing to sit down with us today and educate us further on how to move toward a better day in this whole tension.
Sure. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be on.